Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Come with me on a journey into the mind, into the misunderstood and mysterious world of neurodiversity, into a blaze of daring discovery and desperate darkness, but also, you know, fun. Come with me if you dare, into the Neuroverse.
Hello. Hello. Welcome to Into the Neuroverse. Here we go. We're going into the Neuroverse, where we discuss neurodiversity, my neurodiversity. Everyone's bloody banging on about it, aren't they? And I might as well. Bit of ADHD, bit of autism. I'm trying to get the set. Don't think I'm dyslexic, sadly, but I'm going for all the others. I do have a weird thing, which is I might have said this before, but it's like face blindness, but the opposite, where you think you've met someone, but you haven't. It's called, I was going to say hyperthermia then. It's not that, is it? Called hyper-recognition. So, like, I'm really bloody recognising you, but I shouldn't be because I don't know who you are. But I get it a lot with
people. So you think you've met people before?
Yeah. It's quite weird. And I get, and obviously working in comedy and all that stuff, I meet people a lot. Who, you know, you sort of meet briefly and then go, oh yeah, we did that thing, whatever, you know, or people who work in on TV and stuff, and because there's a lot of people involved. But often I'll go, no, I know you. It's got worse, actually, to the point where I'm looking at someone, I'm sort of in my head going, are they taking the piss? Because I'm sure I know them, and I can't think where, but they're like, no, I don't know.
It's almost like
we've never met. Really weird, yeah, but I get it with audience members as well. I'll be looking at them and I'll be like, yeah, we do. But it's like I can't tell you what the memory is, but it's like I'm just looking at them going, yeah, we did that, we went on a holiday or something, do you know what I mean? Or we worked together, or we had this, we had something. I'm not saying we became lovers necessarily, but we at least, you know, we definitely... We had a long chat at one point or something, and the people were like, no, I don't know you. It gets quite weird.
Because you anyway, said that to me the first time you met me.
I thought I knew you. Yeah. Oh, I had it with you, definitely. I had it with you.
I met you before someone.
And I do know you. I do know you now.
You do now, but you didn't.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's quite weird, isn't it? It's a weird thing to have. It's kind of fun, but a bit embarrassing. But it plays into what we're going to talk about today. So anyway, this show, if you haven't heard it before, it's where I, Colin Holt, I'm a comedian actor. I found out I was ADHD a year and a bit, or a couple of years ago. I don't fucking remember. I've got no time awareness. Could have been 10 years ago. And I've been banging on about it ever since. I'm doing a new show about it, well, partly about it. It's going well. I did some stand-up last night. It was a lot of fun. I'm enjoying going out there and talking.
You've got a lot of stand-up on at the moment, haven't you?
Doing a lot of stand-up on at the minute, which I'm loving. And I've got a suit. Finally got a suit, which is for a photo shoot. It's a sort of, dare I say, a hint of Daniel Craig. But it's sort of M&S. But
M&S, the colour,
but lovely, really grey. It's grey checked,
right.
Blue tie, beauty.
Sounds nice.
I feel fabulous. It's great. It just fits lovely. We got a stylist for the photo shoot. His name was Andras, but I think he said it. I said, is it Andras or Andras? And he went, oh. He didn't say that, but he said a word that I just went, I'm not going to remember that. But there you go. I tried. I did try. Lovely, lovely chap. Lovely set of pearls on him.
Okay.
Big grey jumper, but a set of pearls. And I like that. I like when you just, you know, just offset the normal with something.
I've seen Harry Styles wear something similar to that as well, actually.
Yeah. He was the Harry Styles of stylists. Harry Stylists. He was quite a... Cool. And he just got the one suit. And I thought, is that it? We're paying you for this. But he was like, trust me. And it worked. And he was right. He was right. And I wore it last night on stage at the Comedia. Oh, they loved it. They loved me, Joe. They loved me. So, yes. So this is Joe. He's on the show with me. He's not normally on the show with me. Remind me, Joe, to do a break because I forget that every time. We're going to try and do short and sweet because I've got a lot on at the minute. This was meant to be a live recording, which we did in Joe's bookshop.
My wife.
Your wife.
Not my bookshop.
Your wife's bookshop. Yeah. Which was a lovely bookshop called Have a Word.
Word on the Street.
Word on the street.
I did come up with a name. That's all the only credit.
That's good. Oh, did you really? So you are involved, you see. You are involved. It's a charming little place with the lovely people of Ashurst. Is that right?
Ashdead.
Fuck.
They're going to love you.
Worst research.
It must be said there's lovely people in Ashurst as well. But you haven't met them yet.
But anyway, we recorded it. Well, we thought we'd recorded it. We had a chat. We got a load of people in. I did the stand-up. I was quite nervous, wasn't I? Because it was weird. It was a small little crowd.
It was intimate.
And it was kind of like a book reading. A book reading, you know, when someone, an author, but I haven't written a book yet. I started one a few days ago, and I was really like, this is it. This is going to be the one. And I stopped writing it. I've got to go back to that, Joe. Anyway, we did it and got a little bit thrown, didn't I? Well, let's go into the details in a sec. About from James, the man on the front. But it was a fun time had by all. I thought it was an interesting journey. Joe, who's a fan of the podcast and transformed, I was going to say built, but it was already here, but transformed the shed I'm currently recording from. You might have heard me talk about my shed before. You can hear the seagulls out there.
With inbuilt seagulls. I mean,
built-in seagulls. We don't need those. But lots of shelves, lighting. He's almost there. We're not far off, Joe. It's a bit by bit. But Joe is at thehomehelper.com. Is it?
No, I don't have a website yet.
Oh. But if you want to get him to do your shed, he's very good and he does all sorts of stuff. But also, Joe's a writer himself and we've been working on his script and he's been working on my shed. It's been lovely. And then he's a big fan of the show and he said, do you want to do a live recording in the bookshop? Okay. And I did. And Joe asked me some questions, which was fun. I found actually the question asking very, very weird. But anyway, but then what happened, Joe? What did you tell me? You messaged me the next day. It was all in hand.
It hadn't worked. There was.
Don't you worry, Carl. I've got this.
Don't you worry, Carl. I've got
this. It hadn't worked.
It hadn't worked.
Bad workman blames his tools, dare we say.
Gremlins. Let's do that. Yes. Basically, Gremlin. You could hear me.
You didn't record
you could hear me.
Perfect. I mean, I.
But you were very, very, very quiet.
I'm not one to talk. Very quiet. Could you not turn? There was no way of turning me up.
Not without awful gain, just crashing, real peaking.
So the mic just.
Obviously, my mic in front of me worked, but the mic.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. I don't know if people would like to just hear you. That'd be an interesting. That could be the.
Well, and the other people, the other people's questions, obviously, because I was passing the microphone around.
Could you actually hear them?
Well, because I would give I gave them the mic at some point.
Not all, only one person you did.
No, three of them. Three of them were really clear.
Janet.
The really clear, the lady that knew what she was talking about, the one that actually works with me.
Oh, that was good. Can you remember any of that? Maybe we can.
Yes, yep.
Oh, good, good. Well, this episode is probably going to be better than normal because Joe, unlike me, is actually, apart from not putting in the mics properly or whatever he did, to be fair, it might have been just me tugging up. Glad I've been recording because I did a sort of wanker gesture there. It might be me tugging on the mic because I was tugging.
Well,
do you know what I mean? I was
at one
dicking
point
about,
well.
Wasn't I? Getting up, sitting down. Ah,
oh, but anyway,
we should have just checked it before. But anyway, all's well that ends. All's well that ends averagely well.
Yes.
And we, as the saying goes, and we now here we are. And I really, I don't know if I loved the experience, but I appreciated the experience. I'm still. Still processing it. It was interesting.
What do you remember? The
something
most?
We can talk about.
What?
Okay. Well, it started off like. Things. So I went in very prejudiced. I think I go into all gigs very prejudiced. You know, I build up this idea in my mind that people are going to hate me. I was at a gig last night and I was chatting to a couple of younger comics and I was saying, I still get so nervous, you know, and I was so like, and one of the comics, I don't mind saying, was a bit of a tool. And he was sort of giving me his opinions on stuff. And I thought, fuck off, you know. And he was very like, kind of, yeah, mate, what you got to do is blah, 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 blah. And I was like, shut up, you know. I'm in a really bad mood today. Yeah. But I still go out with this kind of, in fact, I did an LGBT night the other night as Anna Mann. And it was lovely because I went out. It wasn't like as in you have to be LGBT. I mean, I don't think anyone says you have to be LGBT, but it was a kind of generally alternative, what's the word, inclusive kind of build like that. And I went in and it was so nice because I was just like, oh, no one's going to be a dickhead here. And they weren't. They were lovely. They were so up for it. Do you know what I mean? No one's, there's not going to be a stag do.
Do
but then the funny thing
finding...
is I go out and when there is a stag do, so I love them. They're great fun. So I go out with a perceived idea of what people are going to be like. And I think because it was a little bookshop in, sorry, even though you were lovely and your wife's lovely, and I still went out going, oh, they're going to, I, do you know what? I really got my head. They were going to go, yeah, but you know, I talk about this a lot where people go, yeah, but you don't really present as autistic though. Yeah. You know, people are going to go, yeah, but you're just making it up, aren't you, mate? You know what I mean? Which I don't know that quite, I guess I got the idea of, sorry, they'd be quite privileged and sort of confident, yeah, and shout me down.
But I think it's what the whole premise that we obviously,
but they weren't, I should say, they weren't that.
No,
but yeah, sorry, go on.
But the concept for the show was, or what we were going to talk about that night was from the fact that I'd had a discussion with somebody, a younger person, who'd said, you know, what's all the fuss about? And maybe that was playing on your mind,
yeah,
as well. Because obviously, as we spoke about that night, the experience of younger people and neurodiversity is very different. You know, how the world they're living in now is very different to the world you grew up in, which has, you know, informed,
yeah,
you know, how you feel about it.
And which is interesting. We were going to call the episode Why Bother, yeah, weren't we? Because it's like, why are we talking about this? Because younger people are like, well, we're all cool with neurodiversity, ADHD and autism. We don't, I've got friends who have that. We don't bang on about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And someone said to us, you know, to me, to you, to me, to you, they said to you, why are you bothering? Why they didn't do it in a malicious way, but they just like couldn't quite understand why that would be a worthy of a podcast. And I'll be honest, my listening figures agree. But I think the reason why it's worthy of a podcast for people of our age is because to us it was just unheard of, didn't exist. Yeah. As I say, my stand up, you know, when I grew up, we didn't talk about ADHD and autism. We just had one phrase, which summed it all up. He's not right. And that is very much what I, you know, just the way of seeing things was, that was it. And also you were very, I think so many people in my family, as I look back, were ashamed and into silence of not ever, well, I mean, but they wouldn't know what was wrong with them. They just go, oh, we're just like that. Oh, we just have to shut up and not, do you know what I mean? Not bang on too much because we're not right, you know.
No,
I think it's worth doing.
I mean, I watched, I don't know if you've seen it, Robin's Wish, the film about Robin Williams last month. A really interesting little film.
And, what's that on? Sky, is that on?
No, it's on one of the streaming channels that I'm allowed to.
Okay, we'll find it. Well, I suppose
But he had dementia. And he didn't know it was
Robin.
Yeah. And he didn't know. It wasn't, so he was hallucinating. There was obviously other things in there, but it affected his ability to learn lines. It affected, he'd start to hallucinate. And he didn't know. And he spent this whole sort of last chunk of his life struggling with something he didn't know what it was. And if you don't know what's going on, it's really hard, because obviously you don't know where to get help, and you're constantly trying to cover. Sean Levy, the film director, because he did Night at the Museum 3, said he was just trying to cover it all the time, but we could all see something was, you know, he wasn't right, something was wrong. And it is. It's that I can't imagine what it must have been, you know, the experience for you, and certainly at school. And we spoke about your school years, obviously, at the bookshop.
Didn't we? Yeah.
When you know that something's We're going to use very. I'm going to use very rusty words here, so I apologise for it.
Yeah, I should. I should always say the disclaimer that neither of us know what we're talking about professionally or anything. So don't take our advice. You know, this is just our take, our thoughts.
But when you know you're different, but you don't know why you're different, and no one's, and those people who should be looking after you are almost exacerbating that difference because. You're just because you are different. That must be quite a lonely place.
Yeah, and it's very subtle because you don't really know why you're different. You just can't join in the same way. You can't, you know, and it maybe seems a cliche, but what really saved me was drama and comedy and making jokes and stuff. Yeah, I remember talking about that now because I remember saying how there was a time when I got sixth form and I used to kind of dress up like Jarvis Cocker a bit, you know, and I loved it. And there was this, who I knew, they were in the year below me, but they were like, you know, I sort of knew them and they were talking to each other loud so I could hear, you know, just about me just saying, text the piss, don't it? Text the piss. That was it. They were saying he's taking the piss out of us, which I always found so weird that I'm expressing myself and they were wearing, you know, very like, trying to fit in as much as possible, I guess. I guess they were quite popular in a kind of, you know, way. But they were
attacking the thing that's
genuinely angry. And that guy in the audience said they were afraid, didn't they?
Yeah.
He was very interesting. He got an ADHD diagnosis in his 30s. Mm. And he told me, I don't suppose he'd mind me saying this, it's not particularly secretive, but he found out when he was doing business and within the business he could come up with all these, and I think just within the business he got someone came in to work with them one day who is in this, and this was quite a long time ago because the guy was in his 60s probably now, or 50s maybe, you know, so it's at least 25 years ago or something. But he said they immediately spotted he had ADHD, and then but then from there he went away and just set up his own business and realized he had to delegate and just got in people to do all the things he can't do. And then he just created loads of ideas, you know, because he could just do that. Which is what I mean, the thing is being a comic and stuff, the problem is you're doing so much of it yourself all the time, you know, which is quite stressful.
I was going to say, how often do you chat to other ADHD sufferers about having ADHD?
Not much, really, actually, at all. In fact, that should be what this podcast is, isn't it? But... I think I said I went to the ADHD Aware thing, which was really interesting, but this guy did just talk at me. He was lovely, but it becomes a bit unbearable, actually. You think we'd get on, but I don't know if we do. I think I talked last week with Jamie about the ADHD autism thing, if you've got both or you are both, which I think is an interesting third thing. And I think possibly that's why, because I find a lot of people who are very obviously ADHD just too much to bear sometimes, but then also I find people who are very autistic sometimes. I'm like, come on, you know, and it is this weird place I land up in. And it's funny, you know, because you grow up with your family, obviously, and you learn all these things and ideas and ways the world is. And it's only when you're older you realize, that's true. That's all bonkers. Do you know what I mean? And like, I don't have to be that way, you know? Mm. Sort of lost my track of thought there. Sorry, Joe. Bring me back.
No, but that, it's, just to build on that is, from the therapy I've had, one of the things my therapist always used to say to me is, whose voice is that? Mm. And it's a really good thing to do at some point is, you know, when certainly if it's a negative voice or something that you can just to stop and just go, hang on a minute, where's that from?
Yeah.
What's it doing? Do I need to listen? You know, it could be wrong. It could be a wrong voice.
Yeah.
And reject it.
I feel quite stretched thin, like, you know, Cassandra in Doctor Who. Do you remember that? It was Zoe Wanamaker and she was sort of big piece of skin is sort of how I feel at the minute because of various stuff that's going on in my life. And like I think when you're like that or you're tired or overworked and stuff, you go straight to that voice, don't you?
Totally. Yeah.
You react to that voice and you think with that voice, whatever that voice is, whoever
Do you know there's I'm not going to get the name right. This It's a branch of sort of psychology around this idea of family. So inside you are essentially lots of different people who all serve a purpose.
Right.
So you might have, there is a proper name for this, but so you could, so I don't mind sharing it. So for mine, I had this very negative voice and essentially it was there to protect me.
Yeah.
It thinks it's protecting me by keeping me in a certain place and not raising my, you know, and so you kind of go, look, I get what you're doing. I know why you're doing it. But you don't need to, and you know, carefully through an exercise.
Sorry, dude, I lost track there. Sorry, I don't
know. No. So you tell the voice to stand down. You know why it's doing it. So it's a sort of counterintuitive thing because it's being critical, but its job is to keep you nice and small, so you can't be overexposed. And
I'm so bored of that, though. I'm so bored of it because you know when I go out on stage, it's like my. Even though I build up beforehand into this kind of like, is it going to be all right? Do you know what I mean? And all that voice comes in of like, who do you think you are bloody going out and doing that, you know? And then I get out there and it's like, I'm like safe for like 20 minutes. Yep. I'm on stage because it's like.
Did you have that voice?
Oh, just erupt. Sorry. An eruption from the stage. That sounds a bit weird, but you know.
Is that voice bigger now that you're performing as Colin?
The bad voice.
Yeah, I'm just interested.
Yeah, totally.
You knew Anna, you're being, this is you now, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it really is. When I was Anna, it was I'm putting on a show, da-da-da-da, you know, here's this funny lady that I'm being, and it's silly, and it's like, it's sort of like dress up for your parents or something. So do you know what I mean? It's kind of, and also she kind of took over, I guess, as a personality. It was such a, not that I'm like split personality with her, but she's such a dominant. I'd created this dominant based on a few people I'd met. But then when I go out as myself, which now I have found, I've found the Colin who is me, who is as fun, I think more fun now. It's going lovely, you know, and it's really cheeky. And I love like playing on people's perceptions of what it is and all that stuff and kind of, because, and I think that's why, going back to the why bother thing, I think, you know, and this isn't to do down any of the comics, but, you know, with a younger generation of comics, they all just, they like go out and state what they are straight away. I am this. Yeah. And then they have jokes about it, which I think very admirable. And that they have that confidence and beautiful, you know, wonderful that they are able to do that when, you know, even 20 years ago, you wouldn't be able, you could barely do it if you were a woman, let alone anything else. Do you know what I mean? It was like, just weren't accepted as funny or whatever until about 15 years ago, maybe. Mm. But now it's like, but I still struggle with this. So what I do enjoy doing is almost like getting on the side of the blokes. Not that sounds bad. I don't mean like as in making all the
words. No, but in the bookshop, sort of like exactly that,
challenging them a bit, going into there rather than be like, I am this, deal with it. It's kind of like, you know, I like bringing up all the stuff that's the repression and the fucking messed up brain that I have because of it.
You did that. I'm like spaghetti. Bookshop, I think, you know, because it was, into, I mean, there were 25, 38 people there, a mix of ages. They were, I don't know, a meter away from you. I mean, your front row. Yeah, there was such. I think you had probably about 60 years age difference between the people on the front row. I think what you did, you went in, and there was warmth there. You were able to talk about. And so it was a really. Someone said that to me because I've spoken to a few people who were there, and they said it was a really safe environment. And certainly one person who was there said felt really challenged by it and has gone away to do, you know, to really reflect on where he's at. And but he said it was just such a, he could have spent all evening there because, and I'm not blowing smoke at your ass, enjoyed just learning and talking.
Well, that's what I think, that's why it was such an interesting experience, and we must do it again. Or you know, something similar, because I felt like I came and I did my bit, and then it was suddenly like, oh, right, now I'm just talking. and you're asking me questions and I'm being myself and I'm not putting on a show. And that was very scary. You know, I, even though I'd thought about it beforehand, it did kind of throw
and
me.
They were asking there, and I think that's the nice bit as an observer was those, I mean, you had five or six questions. They were personal questions. That people felt safe enough to ask you a question about themselves. So it wasn't just that you were safe, felt safe. They felt safe.
They really did, didn't they? And there was, there's a real sense of like, which may, you know, part of me was a bit like, made me feel a bit like I'm failing in that, but it wasn't, but then it was lovely in that there was a real sense like, go on, you're all right. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in keep going. There was a real sense of like, love and sort of they wanted to hear more, you know, because constantly as I'm doing stuff, this voice in my head is going, shut up, you know.
Well, I noticed you nearly stopped your stand-up at one point and started to talk, all right, we're here to do this. And then you obviously felt safe again and went back to, you know, because I've seen the show, you went back to your stand-up routine. And that was nice to see that because, it was, it would have been intimidating. I mean, I only had to introduce you and I was terrified.
We really,
because well, it's a small crowd.
Barrier as well. I mean, there's something about, and that worked fine. It was well set up and they were lovely people. But sometimes I do gigs and I get there and I think, why have you done this? Do you know, like they've set it up in such a way that it's, I mean, saying that, the regular night I run, the room is very bizarre and it's this bizarre L shape kind of thing. But, you know, some places where it's just in a pub or something and the punters are in there not knowing there's a show on. And I just think, what made you, what possessed you to do this, you know? So there is the thing where you don't have the barrier of the stage, but that was quite challenging itself. But that felt very right. It was really exciting. I love that they didn't know what the fuck was going to happen. And they were willing me on. They were very, there was a guy at the back who was like writing everything down. Do you hear? It was really, he was, I talked to him afterwards. Him and his son were very interesting, and they're both like kind of on the journey.
Yeah.
And he reminded me a lot of my Uncle Keith, actually, that guy who used to write. Reminded me, Keith used to take me to the Royal Concert Hall in Nottingham and to watch old rock and roll bands. I like saying it when I stand up, but most people don't know what I'm talking about. But I saw Shawaddy Waddy five times. If you don't know what Shawaddy Waddy were, they were a sort of Leicester band who, I don't know if they had any hits or what, but they were like, they were like a throwback to the 50s, weren't they? In the 70s, maybe. You know what I mean? But I loved it. But he used to write down the names of every song on the back of his ticket quite methodically. Nice. Do you know what I mean? And then he'd take these tickets home and I think put them in like a file.
On those old photo album kind of things.
Something like that. And it'd have the name of every song just written. And then he'd clap, right? But when he clapped, he couldn't clap normally. He had perfectly normal arms, I think, as far as I'm aware. He's no longer with us, Keith, you might have guessed. But he, you know, I used to do this at my start. I forgot this. It's hard to do this audibly, but what I'm doing is he'd sort of clap up like that and then across. So his arms, like he'd making a cross with his, it was really weird. But looking back, I think he was very autistic. Well, I know it's, you're not very autistic or a little bit autistic, you know, you are autistic, but I mean, so many things he'd do, you know, I don't know if it's okay to out the dead. I think it's all right, isn't it? But
you're doing it with love.
It is with love and great affection. And that's something actually with my new show that I was talking to my producer about it. And as you've seen the show a few times in various forms, and I go talk a lot about all my family, and I try not to reveal anything they wouldn't want me to, but it's all like an attempt to try and bring them back to life almost, you know, or make them like legends, you know, like bring out how brilliant this stuff is about them, even though at the time they were so ashamed of it, I'd say. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Let's take a little break and then come back and maybe we could go back over those questions.
Yep.
Lovely. Thank you, Joe. You're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Okay, we're back into the Neuroverse. I'm here with Joe Swan, my pal and handyman, who is... and very handy today, very handy. Not so handy with microphones sometimes when he forgets to plug them in or whatever he did. But no, he did. No, that was me. I ripped it out, didn't I?
No.
I need to learn. We need to check it. So, yes, we're talking about this live show.
I needed to have
in
done
the bookshop
on the night. I think that ultimately I should have not, I should have either been the sound man or the questioner. I think I was trying to do too much.
What, have an extra guy?
An extra guy.
Eye on that. Well, the guy who was writing stuff down, he offered his services. He said
he was. Well, next time, I think, you know.
Yeah, lovely. So, Joe, can you think back, because I can't remember hardly any of it. Yes. Shall we just talk through it a little bit and the questions?
Yeah.
For 10 minutes or so, the questions they... By the way, please do, if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/Colin Holt. And follow my stuff on Colin Holt Comedy on Instagram and go to the website iamcolinholt.com. There we go. Talking about thinking you might have dementia, I do think I might have. I keep having word salads. Just then I sort of said website. And I keep saying my mum. When I mention my mum in my show, this sounds very, what's the word, Freudian, but I keep calling her mun. Like I can't quite say mum. I can't bring myself to say it. Anyway, that's by the by. Don't let me, Joe. You're doing a great job
for another time. That
absolute,
one,
this absolute bloody piss. This is like a fountain of piss. Oh God! Took the kids to the theme park.
Oh yes.
Thank which Joe helped me. Joe's a real handy man. He really is. Joe got me membership there, and God, I needed a wee, and I had to run to the corner of the car park and do this wee. And the kids were there. I was like, "Stay at the car, children. Stay at
the car park."
I had to. I wasn't going to make it. And they wouldn't get out of the car. I was like, come on, out of the car. And they're like, nah, I'm just looking for my bottle. I just want my teddy. And I was like, no. Yeah, I found a bush. Do you think I might be on CCTV?
There is CCTV there.
Fuck.
There's a toilet there as well.
In the car park?
Yeah, there's an access right by the front door. There is a toilet with the door out.
I hid as much as I could. But the thing is, the Wii, this isn't what we want to talk about. The Wii went on for ages, like five.
I mean, I know people at work. I may have to go in and get the CCTV carefully edited for you.
I mean, I think it's all right if you. It's sort of a farm, isn't it? If you go to a bush, it's not like I'm swinging it around the place.
Let's say yes, but
okay.
For the don't, ladies and gentlemen at home, go to farms and wee.
No. Well, I mean, that's up to them, isn't it? I can't make them.
True.
I'm not.
Well, you're
not
a very influential person, Colin.
I was ready to burst.
Okay.
I think they would have preferred me weeing in the bush to walking into the park with wee flooding out the bottom of my trousers.
Yes.
I hope. God, can you imagine? That's like the Barbara Streisand thing. Did you hear about that? Where she they were going to print a story about, or she heard they were going to print a story about her. It might be Barbara Streisand. It might be someone else.
Okay.
But they were going to print a story about her and she got so stressed. She made it this huge thing. And then they weren't really going to print a story about her. And then she turned it into this do you know what I mean? I end up going back to the farm and being I just need to explain that when I, and they're like, oh, we didn't know and we weren't going to do it.
I think you're fine.
Now you're in trouble, wee man.
The CCTV is there to catch people stealing catalytic converters. So your weeing in a bush is not, I think that's way down the list of things there.
I hope. God. Oh, I've got enough. As if I haven't got enough on my bloody plate right now. I've pissed on my own plate. Right, Joe, come on. Let's have these questions.
Okay. Where did we start? So, I originally spoke to you about what it was like growing up, but we've kind of discussed that. We had quite an interesting chat about whether you feel your neurodiversity has aided your comedy. So,
aided my comedy.
I
don't remember any of that, but
in terms of just the way your brain works, the quick firing nature of it.
Oh, definitely. And I can make connections, I guess, very quickly, and weird connections. It's kind of like that thing of like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that, I suppose, isn't it? Mm. I'm not particularly hilarious today, but you know, when I'm connecting to people and it's all just comedy's just taking me by surprise, isn't it? So I guess if someone is being, someone is neurodiverse, I guess that's why all comedians are, people are finding out their ADHD and autistic and stuff, because it's like, we are, you know, when we get it right, we are loved for saying the things you wouldn't expect someone to say. Although it's interesting, I guess there's kind of two types of people, isn't there? Two types of comics. There's the one who are like, oh yeah, it is like that. Do you know what I mean? I'm relaying to you how the world is and we laugh because it's a recognition. And there's the ones that go, I wouldn't have thought of that. You know what I mean? So I guess it helps in that. They're all both though. So I think it fills that gap, and also just the desire. Like I say, like I feel very safe when I'm on stage and properly performing.
Okay. And one of the questions that came out of the audience was about characters on TV and whether you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, your kind of thoughts on that, whether you feel there are examples of characters we're possibly laughing at as opposed to with. I thought you dealt with that very well, because that was a question.
Oh, did I?
Well, it was.
Looking back at some of the classic, you know, Basil Fawlty or whoever, or Frank Spencer and all that, there probably is, like, it's not stated, is it? I guess that was the difference in the past. But you're definitely loving them and loving their struggle, aren't you? Even though that's why I never like people, as you say with Anna, oh, she's a monster, isn't she? She's a monster, you know? And I think, no, she's great. I don't think, oh, people go, God, she's such a twat. I know twats like that. And I was thinking, no, mate, you're a twat. But it's like,
They spoke about Sheldon, obviously, with the Big Bang Theory.
Sheldon,
he's, you know, to all intents and purposes, projects as someone who could be seen as, or, you know, on the spectrum. But we laugh with him, we're on his side. Whereas opposed to the example that was used was about someone who perhaps we're laughing at.
Yeah. Because they're just weird. Look at that weirdo. That's what can happen, isn't it? Whereas Sheldon is heroic, isn't it? But then there's also that thing of, if someone who isn't, say, autistic is writing that, like Rain Man, you know, is obviously a classic. Is that really patronizing and wrong? I don't know. This is why this young comedian annoyed me so much, because he had so many opinions, and I really struggle with opinions, because I'm always like, I don't know. But
can you think of any examples at the moment of good, strong writing where the neurodiversity is recognized and celebrated, but we're able to laugh with it?
I see a lot with like panic attacks and stuff, people getting across that thing and getting overwhelmed. Often in detective shows and stuff, they'll do that well, won't they? Just the kind of like, True Detective, I think, sort of touches on that, but it doesn't have obviously ADHD characters. But I mean, nowadays, would you go writing a character, you go, oh, this character is ADHD or he is autistic. Like I'm working on the script at the minute, and I'm making the main character is ADHD, but I'm trying not to make it, this is the ADHD show, or this is, Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because then it can become very issues, I suppose, can't it? And it becomes like, right, let's show you what it's like to have ADHD, which I think is great in its place. Like, there's loads of Instagram stuff does that very well, doesn't it? I guess that's the point of this podcast. Yeah. But like, it's the struggle. It's the eternal struggle that that person is in. And I guess...
So with your show that you're taking up to Edinburgh, how much are you going to promote the fact that essentially this is a show talking about your journey with ADHD?
It's going to be about that, but it's also going to be more really about how it's not picked up on.
Yeah.
And because there's quite a lot of shows you're like, oh my God, I got ADHD. I'm off my head, mate. You know, which is fine, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be about the past and about people's struggle that was ignored. And yeah, so I mean, I guess it is about ADHD, but I don't want to just do a series of jokes about ADHD. No. What I'm saying, I want to talk about the world on a bigger palette and how that is that has affected so many people.
Yeah,
you know, and I come to a lot of conclusions about that. But I don't know, maybe that's the inner voice in me. So like, maybe other people go, we'll just do an ADHD show. We'll just do a show about it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, generally with Anna, and I think it's true of me, I've always done shows which are like deliberately a little bit subverting the thing. So the depression one I did, everyone was doing shows about having depression at that point. And so even though I was genuinely talk about it, it was kind of taking the piss out of that form at the same time. But maybe that is just cowardice, or you know what I mean? Like, maybe actually sort of not just going out and saying it, but having it, to do this kind of like, I know what you're thinking, oh, he's making it up type thing. But I guess I have to acknowledge that in the room for some reason.
It's a challenge though, isn't it? Because obviously if you do put a label like that, commercially you're potentially going to put some people off, but also that people turn up with going back to the bookshop, that was because we'd advertised it as a night to talk where you were going to discuss neurodiversity and your journey with ADHD. That's what the audience turned up, and that maybe led to the kind of the audience that were there, but also the freedom and space to have the discussions that we had, because it was acknowledged before anyone had opened their mouth that that's what this space was going to be used for.
That's true. Yeah. And actually I do get a lot of people coming because of it now. Audiences are starting to come because they have neurodiversity and are interested in it. And I think they do get help from it and everything. It's not like I'm sort of like, taking the piss out of them or anything, but there is this sort of element of like, I'm trying to normalize it. It's quite a boring word, isn't it? But I guess in a way that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to go, I feel sort of weird.
Well, that goes again, why bother? Say doing a podcast about it still needs, but that's why it still needs to be bothered about, because if people need a space to be able to discuss it, that means there isn't a space. That, you know, that there is still a need. Why are we talking about it? Because, and I think one of the things I said to the when we were talking about why is it such a big thing, I was going, but just because it's not a big thing to you, are you talking about it? Because you can accept and just go, I don't mind who you are, but you're not really having a discussion with that person about what it's been like for them. I mean, one of the things, I enjoyed from the night was, I've never really spoken to you about it. And as we've gotten to know each other, I've had to, I've learned the kind of things that I can say that can trigger you.
Mm.
So I'm still learning how to help you, support you, be a friend to you. And I think that's why there is a need to talk about it still, because just going, everyone can be what they want is...
So many situations you get in and you just go, I can't do this. I can't do this situation that's going on right now. Do you know what I mean? And I wish I could call it out more. you know, and like, for example, I felt very smothered by that dude last night with his opinions and stuff. And I was just like, I wish I still, even then, even as a younger comic than me and stuff, I wish I, even then I didn't have the sort of courage to just, or self-belief, whatever, just go, can you just shut up? And just, you know what I mean? I don't want to, just shut up. I can't handle listening to you. Because it's really overwhelming, you know.
I remember listening to one
and we're
episodes.
Really learning like sensory stuff. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was saying like sensory stuff, like can really, no. Sensory stuff can really knack your day, you know. Like you feel something weird or you smell something weird or you taste something weird or you have to block it out. But you don't in life, you know, you just get on with it. I mean, that's what my mum used to say. We get on with it, don't we? We get on with it. And it's like, but maybe there is an argument you have to get on with it. Otherwise, well, the fear is that society will stop, won't it, if we all like kind of actually do what we need rather than what we're meant to do.
But there is,
actually need.
Sorry if this is a too personal question, but have you?
Are you?
In your friends?
Sorry, Joe, you literally froze on that bombshell. But
that's all right. I'm back.
Yeah, say it again. Your personal question.
Have you noticed since your, has there been a sort of re-education, a re-thinking of some of your relationships, have some of your friends recognized it and changed or reflected on how they handle you? Or have you sat down with anyone and gone, look, just to let you know, because I mean, you've done that with me and I respect you for doing that. But, or has it just been business as usual?
Actually speak out for myself.
Yeah.
Speak out for myself if something is bothering me. Yeah, I've tried it a few times. I try it all the time. And I try the opposite, which is when I get really stressed out that I've said something wrong and I get fixated on that or I've upset someone in some way, then I always now contact them straight away and say, are you okay? Have I said something? What did I say? Did that, you know, or like that could have been perceived as this, but I didn't mean that. I do that all the time, you know, not that I should go around life constantly worrying what I've said.
But that's very much you adjusting you.
Yeah.
In the same way that if you had someone.
Yeah, I think I've tried to. I mean, it's people aren't as great as you want them to be, really. There was one guy on a job where I said he was sending me loads of fucking information. And it was like, I was like, I can't just tell you, I'm neurodiverse. I'm really struggling with the amount of stuff you're giving me. You know what I mean? It was like, I can't, you know, I can barely open email sort of thing sometimes. And it's like, or I get completely stuck, lost in my phone. But anything that is too much information, it just stops. My brain starts working. And he was all right, but he was a bit like, oh, your agent didn't flag anything about this and all this sort of stuff. And I just thought, oh, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? It was a bit like,
why don't you do more of that?
You know, because I don't always know what I'm asking for is one thing. In fact, literally having this conversation has made me think more about certain people I do stuff with that I need to ask more. And like, I don't know, maybe I do need to change aspects of my business way of doing things because I don't delegate enough. Do you know what I mean? But like,
but if you lost your legs tomorrow, we'd all make everyone would make adjustments.
Yes, that's true.
If you lost your eyesight tomorrow, everyone would make adjustments. You've had a diagnosis of ADHD. People should make adjustments. Not unrealistic, you know, we don't, but adjustments could and should be made.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You're allowed to ask for that, surely.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd hope so. I just assume people don't think it's real. And despite everything, and like I said, I was self-diagnosed with autism, you know, but that's very hard to understand. Very hard to feel the confidence to say, because to say self-diagnosis, people just, I did come up with a little line today, which was like, I have self-diagnosed with autism, but I've also self-diagnosed as a wonderful lover. So take it. It's quite, but I tried that on you and you laughed. So, you know, it's going in the show tomorrow. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, This guy, well, do you know what I mean? I keep going on about this guy. He's obviously got stuck in my brain. If I was, my therapist is away at the minute, but I know I'd be talking about it for ages. But it really threw me, sort of came in, and I, without going into detail, but it was like I talked about something, a good thing, that I'm not, basically I'm not getting paid particularly for. And he did this whole like, oh, I think it's pathetic when people don't get paid for stuff when they, do you know what I mean? It's like, you're just giving it to the businessman, man, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. Mm. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it, do you know what I mean? You're giving your stuff for free. You're giving your what was it? Intellectual property for, away for nothing. You should be capitalized, not, and just telling me I should be doing this and you should be doing this. And I was like, I just crumpled in seconds. And then after I get really, because I don't know how to deal with it at the moment, I get quite shitty. Yeah. And I couldn't really look at him as he was going and stuff. Couldn't make, do you know what I mean? I was like, fuck off. And that kind of stuff is really obnoxious, I think, where it's like, because it's shaming, that's the biggest thing. And I think all my life and with a lot of my family, I think that has been the number one thing is shaming. And loads of people I know, you know, and it's like, I don't do this because of the shame or because, yeah, you're right, I'm stupid, I should be doing it like this. And it's so fucking pig ignorant, you know, to just go, you're an idiot. And it's so pathetic, because, but it just shriveled me down to nothing. Do you know what I mean? Who else did it make to me once? It made me think of when I was working in a call center years and years. I talked to my therapist about this, working in a call center, and there was these two very cool, they were like brothers, twins, and they were super cool, but like they really were. They sort of both looked like Jimi Hendrix in different ways. It was kind of, and I sort of obviously admired them a lot. You know, I thought they were very cool, very cool. And I felt like Alan Partridge, you know, but they were saying like, they were talking about their pay and I said, oh, I only get paid this much. And they were like, oh, they were like, literally like, I can't believe people who don't ask for more money. Like, I can't believe you just don't have the guts to just go and ask for some more money because you should be getting paid more. I'm getting paid more because I demanded more money. And they're right. And I guess you could argue they're trying to help me on some level, like this guy was last night. But I just find that is the worst thing, because my brain doesn't go, you know what? He's right. I should be getting more money. My brain just goes, yeah, I'm pathetic. Yeah. You know, I can't do normal And
I call that my operating system. I think it's almost, some people, you know, I think have a core operating system where, you know, whether it's been because they've been had unconditional love or a normal parent, you know, just circumstance, nature, nurture, whatever it is, has just given them
the secure. It's called a secure attachment, isn't it? Secure parental attachment. Yeah, I think it is, but no, I think you're probably right. I think it is the nurture thing, and it is the secure, growing up with a secure attachment. We could talk about that another day, but there's a whole thing about attachment theory.
Just a sense of worth, a secure sense of the value of you and what you are worth.
Well, there's that weird thing where if you are optimistic, if you look at life in a sort of optimistic way, you literally live longer. It's like proven. So it's like, I mean, I read this somewhere, but look, you know, it actually, like, coming at life in negative has knock-on effects within your body. Again, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. It's just something I've read, but it, you know, in a few places, that actually having an optimistic, even though you, and the doubt, you know, people will shame you to go, well, that's naive, isn't it? To be optimistic or to be, you know, because the world's awful, which I agree, but it's like, but literally it makes you live longer if you're optimistic. yeah, very interesting, Joe. Very interesting. Let's leave it there, dude.
Okay, mate.
I'm quite wiped out. I know there's more you could ask me, but come back another time, buddy, always. And we'll chat again.
Anytime.
Unless, did we finish that?
That's
do you get that sense of shaming thing, of that thing of, you were saying sometimes with the handyman thing, if you don't mind me saying, people will knock you down for price all the time and stuff like that. And there is that sense sometimes where you're like, well, that's not what I'm worth. I try and do that sometimes, but you know, the reality is I'm not worth as much as I'd like to be, it seems. Or, you know,
there's that lovely quote that, which is from, there's a book, Perks of Being a Wallflower. I don't know if you've read it.
I've never read it. I know the name.
There's a line in there where this one of the characters is clearly with the wrong person, and the main character is like, come, you know, they should be together. Why are you with him? And she says, we accept the love we think we're worth. And I think...
What's that? Oh, we accept the... Oh, okay.
And it's...
So we, yeah.
It's
we get the love that we think we deserve almost.
Yeah. So we allow people to treat us to the degree to which we feel we are worth. And if we... And then there's a struggle in that, and I can relate to, you know, if you want to be worth more, you know, because it's, if your brain's going, no, but I am worth more than that, that's when you start to get shitty with people, because you have that moment of going, well, actually, no, I am worth more than that. But in those moments, the foundation, the core of you doesn't, because it doesn't value you, you don't present as someone who should be valued. So yeah, I often will, I'll go above and beyond because I think that's what I have to do. Whereas other people would just walk off, go, no, I ain't doing that. I'm going a bit round.
Yeah, I remember this actor, right? I was on this radio job, and he was a bit of a knob in some ways, but I remember being quite admiring of him. Where it was like break. It was like, just before the break, they're like, just before the break, we're going to practice this song that we're going to sing in the show. And this guy came out who'd written it and sang the song. And he like, and he's like, whoever, I can't remember the names, but he's like, he's going to sing the song for you all so you know how it goes, you know. And then we'll do it and then it's break kind of thing. And this guy sang the whole song, and it was loads of it. And it was this all kind of like, you know, like a kind of Scottish aria or something like that. No, not a Scottish, you know, like a kind of Welsh, or like a almost operatic. And he did the whole thing. It was quite nervous about it in front of like six of us bloke actors singing this thing. And we were all watching him. And then the lead guy he sang the whole thing. It must have been 3 minutes. And then the lead guy just went, no, I'm not doing that. And walked off. It was break. And there was this real like, but you see the producers, and this guy who said that, no, I'm not doing that. He's like, not like, he's sort of known, but he's not like, you know.
Yeah.
It's not Tom Cruise by any length, by any stretch. But you see the producer going, oh, right, okay, he doesn't want to do it. Okay, right, you know what I mean? And he's demanded his worth. He's just gone, no.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, could you just sing it a bit? And he's like, no, I'm not going to learn that. I'm not going to learn that. He just refused to learn it. No, I don't want to sing that. But I love the confidence that he let the man sing the entire thing, full volume, and then just went, nah, I'm not going to do that. Whereas I'd be like, great, yeah, yeah, right, okay, yeah, I'll give it a go. But he was just like, no, I don't want it. Do you know what I mean? I've finished my, you're not just going to tack this whole song that I don't know. Just tack it on the end and we'll just do it. Cause it's going to be, in a way, he's also, I mean, partly, I think he just couldn't be asked, but also I think he's sort of going, it'll be shit. So no.
Brilliant. I watched an interview with John Travolta, and he has in his contract, or he said in his interview, as in his contract, he finishes at 6.
Right. Great.
He just says, no, I finish work at 6. Yeah. Apparently Gene Hackman told him to do it, but he just went, no, I want to go home and see my kids and have dinner. So he just says, no, I finish at 6. That's it.
And
what a good thing to do.
Robin Williams to fit. Dear old Robin Williams, I will watch that, but apparently I read somewhere he used to get people, any film or whatever he'd be on, he'd get a local homeless guy or a group of people a job on the film set. That was in his contract, that you had to hire some people on the street, you know, who couldn't get a job. What a man.
We need to look at your contract, Colin. We need to look at your contract.
Yeah. What contract? I don't think I've got any, have I?
Well, like, there's the first problem.
With the farm, pissing everywhere. I can piss wherever I like. That's my one thing. Great. Thanks, Joe.
No worries, mate.
I'm going to have to go. But let's stop the recording there. But yeah, don't forget to rate and review the show. I'm not sure. I feel like a slight change coming on. Maybe miss next week. I don't know. I'm not sure at the minute. I don't know. Is this episode 6? Could be, couldn't it? I think maybe 7. So we're due an interview. Might do an interview next week, but and Janie will be back with us. But yeah, thank you to Joe. Patreon.com/Colin Holt. Lovely. Thanks, Joe. I'm going to stop the recording there. Bye.
Bye.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.